Hello, we're live and broadcasting on the internet, and this is another Google Hangout on Air with In Mind, In Body, and today we're joined by Tessa Guy, who is the founder of In Mind, In Body, Jan Alco, and Jackie Holder. How are you all, ladies?
Good, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. Now, Tessa, we did one of these Hangouts not that long ago, Stories and Metaphors. And it was actually a great success of the podcast, particularly that we recorded the audio from the feed. Has had quite a lot of plays, and there's been some interesting feedback. So if you could just recap on what Stories and Metaphors is, and then we can let you ladies have a good chat about it.
Well, if I start by saying part of the purpose of In Mind, In Body is to empower people to believe in themselves. And part of that empowerment is to understand the impact that their thoughts have on their health and well-being. And often in times of medical diagnosis, it can be quite stressful. But the impact of their thoughts on their immune system and their health and well-being can be quite detrimental. So that it's necessary and very helpful to find ways of being able to release those emotions. Whether it be writing it down, whether it be listening to stories, in order for people to be able to cope and find a way to express themselves. I know I was very fortunate to link up with Jan's friend, cardiologist Dr. Harvey Zarin in Boston, Jan?
Boston.
He talks about that most people with a physical complaint have not had their hearts listened to by either themselves or the people around them, and finding a way to express that is very important.
That's interesting.
Jackie, I don't know if part of your work comes in to help people express their emotions.
Well, it's really funny because as you said that, I was just writing down what the cardiologist said, because I often find that working with individuals, we're often getting, the writing is often telling them what their heart feels, but their head does not connect with. So the rational mind, even though it is very important to bring heart and head together, very often in our everyday lives, we overlook the heart. So I love this quote, you know, that we have not had the heart listened to, which can result in the physical ailment. But I think journal writing and therapeutic writing can help people do some of that work, which will preventative rather than have the actual symptoms and have to look at a cure. So I'm really heartened by that, and I can see a way in which the writing process really, really helps with that.
Okay.
He is great fun. He had me laughing the whole time, actually.
That's good to hear as well.
Right.
Not surprising he's a cardiologist. Very open-hearted.
And just to, Tessa, just to sort of bring in, what sort of people and what sort of use cases would there be for people to do this, to go through this process?
I believe it will help anybody with any illness, because the subconscious mind has the ability to create physical change in our body, and whether that comes out with a cancer diagnosis, whether it's diabetes, whether it's heart problems, you know, we're all different and we all exhibit those changes differently, but they're often from the heart, and the subconscious mind is working together to draw our attention to it and to find ways to change our lives and change our thinking. Jan, have you got any examples that you could share with us, with clients?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the kind of connection between thoughts and emotion, because emotions can cloud our thinking, but also the kind of thinking we do can create new emotions. So if we're always thinking in hopeless ways, or we're catastrophizing about the worst that can happen. And, you know, this is very relevant to people with cancer. We can create emotions of fear or anger, really emotions that aren't very helpful for our immune system and our physical well-being. So, and that can have quite long-term impact. For example, if we keep thinking the same hopeless thoughts, for example, you know, I had a client, a guy who created stories about his life that were, you know, I've always been a victim, you know, bad things have always happened to me. And if we keep thinking along those pathways, with no way of resolving those kinds of issues, it can lead us into depression. It's a kind of vicious cycle, really. And it can have quite an impact on the brain. It can lower our levels of serotonin, which is the brain's happiness chemical, and lead us into some pretty dark places. And as a result, we can lose our motivation and stop doing the things we love to do. So what I did with this guy, because his mind would always go down this negative path, was to help him to relax deeply and then to create another pathway. So as he was ambling along the countryside on a lovely day in his mind, he would come to this junction of two pathways, and one of the pathways would look very dark and uninviting and not full of fresh air or any beautiful surroundings, whereas the other pathway would look very light and beautiful and full of bird song, and he could feel the fresh air. And we began to encourage him to walk down this new pathway, which was a lot more hopeful, and in order to really generate those more positive emotions. And we imagine that dark pathway actually becoming more and more overgrown, so it was harder to go down that pathway. Well, and as he practiced with that, he, of course, that starts to create new neural connections in the brain. This is not just imagination. This is the incredible way that the brain can begin to change as a result of what we're thinking and the stories that we're telling ourselves. So he began to feel more hopeful because the emotion followed the thought pathway, and then he started to see that there were possibilities, that there were options, and that he didn't have to stay that victim that he'd cast himself in. So that's just one example of, you know.
And did you, when you went through this process with him, did you notice an immediate difference in his outlook, his
sure.
posture?
I mean, yeah, you can watch people bodily, you know, the effects of inspiring visualization and going down this lighter pathway. And if you feed in enough positive detail, you can watch people relax and even smile. And also you can introduce movement like dancing or skipping down the path. Right. And people, you can see the joy begin to creep back on somebody's face where they may not have felt that emotion of joy for maybe years, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a very strong link, the thoughts and emotion.
What do you think of that, Tessa?
That's what Embody is all about. There's so much now scientific research to prove the impact that visualization can have. And when you're thinking positively, positively or negatively, but if we can change, as Jen says, you're thinking down the positive route, then you will have chemical reactions, emotions, neural pathways, everything, in order to create that positive physical change within the body. It's not...
And I guess, Jackie, the same can arise from the writing process as well. You can get to that kind of place through writing as well as visualising.
Because I was really struck by what you were sharing there, because this was very much an example of where using the body and using the mind and the thought process and those very powerful visualizations challenged those limiting beliefs and created those new neural pathways. Which, when I'm running writing workshops, I'm used in my books and the writing activities in them. It's a way of helping people use writing in a very creative way that will shift some of those thoughts and beliefs, which are some of those negative patterns which people spend going round on a loop. And as you were speaking, Jan, I was thinking about, I don't know if we can see this on the camera, but the labyrinth is one of the examples of the exercises that I have in my book, 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well. And I used it the other day in a conference with about 80 people, and I got them all. So the idea is that you get a printed sheet of two sheets of the labyrinth, and you think about a challenge or a dilemma that you have. And you start at the beginning of the entrance to the labyrinth and you physically write about the challenge or dilemma along the pathways of the labyrinth. So you're literally physically moving your hand in the way you would walk a labyrinth. And it was lovely to just hear the quietness and the depth with which people just really focused and concentrated in doing that practice. And when they had written out as much as they could about the dilemma, I then asked them to draw a line that then took them right into the center of the labyrinth and invited them to sit there for a few minutes and just notice what kind of feelings, emotions, ideas came to them before they went to the second sheet. And then they wrote down the ideas and the responses that would help them to shift their feelings and thoughts about the challenge, some solutions, some ideas that might take them in a different direction. And that's literally a way of them laying down those new neural pathways. But we're using imagery in the same way that Jan's just described using the visualization. And, you know, Jan's also talked about emotions, and emotions can be both positive and negative, and in the writing process, when used in a very conscious way, they can connect with the subconscious, and often our emotions can tell us really powerful things about either what we want or what we don't want. You know what I mean? So, like, sometimes we're often told, you know, negate your emotions, they're just feelings. I mean, certainly for myself, I've noticed that actually, a lot of the times, if you just allow yourself to be with your emotions, they're very powerful signals and signs. Mm-hmm. So the writing process can really help you to really get connected to that.
Right.
Jackie, do you have any other examples of tools that you use within the writing to help people?
Well, the book is it's part of the same series as Jan's book of 49 Ways to Think Well. This is 49 Ways to Write Well, and so there are 49 ways and different ways of actually doing that. But the second one that I would share is it's probably popular with a lot of people who come from a psychology background or a coaching background, and it's called the ABCD beliefs exercise, which comes from Albert Ellis, who was the founder of Rational Emotional Therapy. And I really like this exercise as a very structural exercise, bringing the head and the heart together. Because very often what people come to, when they come to telling stories, when they come to writing about their stories and their experiences, they're writing about very sometimes difficult experiences and emotions that might get in the way of them being in the present, them accessing their real potential, them healing, you know. So we really want to get in touch with the things that will enable us to heal. And the ABCD kind of methodology, the model, you start off with the A, which gets you to identify what the activity or event that was often the trigger. You know, what was the actual experience that may have caused you to begin that process of that journey of laying down that very first neural pathway about, you know, not liking yourself, feeling shame, feeling vulnerable, being attacked, just something that's really triggered something deep to your core. What was that event? Really just identifying it. And then the B stands for identifying the belief that has come about. It's almost like you're erecting the first foundation stone of the monument that grows into this thing called the belief. And this belief becomes something that we consolidate through continuing to add to the experiences that either confirm or reaffirm the actual existence of that belief. And then the C is just really mapping out, just for yourself so you can be clear, what are the consequences of having that belief? You know, how is it showing up in your life? What is it causing you to do? What is it causing you not to do? You know, it might be causing you to, you know, you might be relying on addictive practices, addictive habits, limiting thoughts. You know, what are the things that it really hinders you from becoming and doing? And what are the things that it draws you away from? And then, this is a bit that I really like, then very, very rationally, you start to disagree with the facts about the actual belief that you have. So what is not true about this belief?
Jackie, is there in this process help from somebody else? Or
Can I kind of add to that? Because I use that model as well. And
yeah.
Where you get to that stage of, you know, well, what can I do about it now? How can I challenge it? There's two really useful things to do. One is to make sure you're relaxed, because when you're relaxed, your thinking brain is in a much better shape. You know, when you're stressed, your thinking brain starts to shut down and you're into very black and white thinking and you can't see possibilities. So first of all, to get yourself in a relaxed state, and that also enables you to step back from yourself and see your behaviours, the consequences that Jack has nicely explained, in a bit more context so that you can actually watch yourself and how you behave and what your beliefs are. But the second thing that's really helpful, if you haven't got somebody to take you through this process, is to put that belief, that unhelpful belief, like in the dock, as if it were in a courtroom, and to bring in your witnesses for, you know, people like, what would my best friend say if they heard me saying I'm useless, I've never amounted to anything in my life? What would my partner say? You know, to start to challenge that, to have a strong defense, if you like, of other people, because sometimes it's hard to do it for yourself. You can kind of immediately get evidence for why I'm useless, why I'm a failure. But actually, if you say, what would my best friend say if they heard me saying this out loud, or my partner, or somebody who loves me or works with me and values my work, you get a very different answer, and you can start marshalling the evidence of why that belief is not true, and therefore what would be a more hopeful belief to have about myself, what would be a more valid belief to hold about myself. And it may be something like, well, actually, I did the best that I could in difficult situations with the resources and understanding I had at the time. And now I can bring more resources to bear. And I know that I don't have to keep repeating and going back to that situation and the way that I handled it in the past.
Interesting.
The first tool that Jan was talking about, getting yourself into a relaxed state, I think when we often think of a relaxed state, we think literally in a relaxed state, that you're deep breathing and you're relaxing the mind and the body. But funny enough for me, my most relaxed state comes when I run. And I run without headphones on, so I'm totally out in nature. The world around me, and for me that's the time that I have the best thoughts and the best clarity on the way forward. I guess I talk to myself all the way along my run, but it's I'm just trying to illustrate to people a different way of using that relaxed state. You don't have to think you have to meditate or anything along those lines, if it doesn't suit you. Obviously, for some people it does. But my relaxed state is actually probably running.
But I think I think all of these ways are giving people different options and ways that they can actually work with all of these exercises. So in some situations, I think people, like if someone was working with Jan, for example, Jan's strength is that she's really going to help that person access the resourcefulness, as you rightly said, that we can access when we are in that relaxed kind of state in the way that you described it. When you're running on your own, Tessa, that is a very powerful way that you are accessing your own resourcefulness through that process of getting into your body and being in your body and being out in the elements, actually, and out in nature, which we know can be very healing and have a great impact. I'm also thinking about a number of times when I'm working in one-to-one coaching situations with leaders and managers in organizations where sometimes they have not got into that fully relaxed state. And that's why I loved your example, Jan, about the witness and your best friend, because that is the way in which we would elaborate on an exercise like that. You know, if someone's really stuck, and even as a coach, you might be saying, well, have you thought about this or have you thought about that? Yeah. But sometimes just using those two examples that you gave there, which were lovely, would help somebody move out of their own thinking mind into the shoes of somebody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're having to be creative. And that's the thing what I noticed with the writing. Sometimes the writing will naturally take the person to that place. They would naturally connect to, oh, let me think about writing what my best friend might say. Let me think about what my partner would say. Mm. Sometimes the writing has information for us rather than the other way round.
Mm. Jackie, so how can people find out about your courses? Because obviously I think it sounds a great thing for people to be able to get involved with. So
people can... at my website, which is www.jackieholder.com. And if you want to go in there and sign up for my free journal journey guidebook, then you'll get access to a whole wealth of writing and creativity resources that are all about different tools and techniques like we've talked today that will help you develop yourself on a number of different levels, from your personal development, your spiritual development, developing yourself as a writer, developing yourself as a creator. There's a host of different resources and podcasts there. I've also got my online program on the website, Paper Therapy, next one starting in June. And then we've got our retreat in Greece, which is only 25 days away.
You have a very active life, Jackie, don't you? Very active.
I'm trying to do what I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I've got to say, I get a lot of pleasure out of writing. I don't have as much time I don't get as much time to do that as often as I would like, to be honest with you. But I really love blogging and writing out blogs, and it really helps me focus, I've got to say. So I can see how that a lot of people would enjoy that, Jackie.
Yeah, and blogging is your digital sort of journaling. I see it as my digital journaling, and you don't need a lot of time to write to have it be of value and be meaningful.
Mm.
Do you think it makes any difference whether you write on paper or whether you type it out? A better way of doing it.
I've got lots to say about that. I've got lots to say.
Not glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, analogue. I prefer analogue, which is handwriting. Mm. And I think that's because if I be very, very basic, your hand is connected to your heart, and it is the heart that we're wanting to connect with. We know that the heart is like the second brain, or the first brain in some respects, and that's what we want to access. And there is lots of research that has proven that handwriting impacts differently in terms of memory. So loads of research has shown that when people were asked to memorize particular facts, and then they had to either memorize it through digital means or by writing it down, they did far better in terms of their memory.
That's very interesting.
And that's actual hard scientific research that has proven that. Right. And people just access so much more when they write by hand. But that's a whole nother...
The only problem is, though, with me is that my handwriting's so bad that I can't even read it myself sometimes.
Do you know what? People always say that, and I get that. And do you know what the truth is? If you give yourself time and you know the essence and the meaning of what you're saying, yeah. You will know what you've written.
Sure, sure.
Do you actually, just interestingly, talking about handwriting, do you think your emotions are different depending on how legible you allow your handwriting to be? Does that make sense?
Well, you've got to see my... I've got two exercises in 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well. One is writing with your non-dominant writing hand, which obviously, if you're writing with your non-dominant writing hand, your writing's not going to be as legible. And I've got this fantastic exercise in there, which I do with large groups, which is writing about the animal, talking about metaphors. We're talking about metaphors today, which is describe the animal that really reflects who you think you are. So first of all, you ask the question, as an animal, what animal do you think you are? And then with your non-dominant writing hand, you write about the animal you actually think you are. Well, it's amazing what people access through that. And the thing is, we actually access different emotions and connect and write about things in a different way when we write with a non-dominant writing hand. So there's a lot of information and data there. The other one is my exercise called Palmerspet. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing it right, but the idea is that you write about a difficult experience or feeling or emotions that you're having for half a page. Or a few lines, then you write over on top of those lines some more thoughts and feelings about what you're experiencing. And then you write over that, the second lot, you write over it again. And the idea is that a lot of people have anxiety about people reading their journals. Mm. Every workshop that I run, people say, well, what about if somebody reads this? And the idea of this practice is that you can write about emotions and feelings that another person won't be able to read, but you'll be able to express what you're feeling. You're laying down the writing on top of different layers.
Very interesting.
Very powerful.
Yeah. Now, we've been running this hangout now for nearly half an hour, and I don't know about you guys, but I could talk about this all day. It's fascinating. But I think that we'll start bringing things to a close now. I just wanted to plug all the different websites. Now, we'll start with Jan because we couldn't get her lower third sorted out when we started this this hangout. So I'll read it out. And Jan's website is hypnotherapyforliving.co.uk.
Could I just give a couple of bits of information as
well?
Of
course. Of course you can.
Two things. A lot of little tips and ways of using the mind more positively are in my book, which is 49 Ways to Think Yourself Well.
Right.
And I'm speaking about harnessing the power of the mind at a one-day or half-day cancer retreat for people with cancer and their carers in North London on Sunday the 24th of May. And perhaps we can put a link up if people want information about that. And I'll be doing a bit of practical visualization on that day as well.
Okay.
Jan, send me the information and I'll put it up on our homepage.
And I will put it up on the Residence Network as well for you.
So
you
can, and it's actually free as well. So
fantastic.
A half-day retreat that's free of charge.
Wonderful.
Excellent events.
Right.
Yeah, I've been there. I know that it was so worthwhile going.
Thanks, Jackie. There'll also be an opportunity to experience some meditation. So I think anyone will come out of that half day feeling
pretty good,
a lot more relaxed and well resourced.
Oh, wonderful!
For coping with their illness or for coping with the illness of a loved one.
Okay, now. Jan is a clinical hypnotherapist, and if anybody wants to talk to Jan, a great way to do that is on Twitter, @JanAlcoe. That's A-L-C-O-E. So yeah, make sure you follow Jan on Twitter and have a chat with her. Now, Jackie, your website, you've already given that a plug, but we'll just do that again very quickly. It's www.jackieholder.com, and you can follow Jackie on Twitter at Jackie Holder, and that's Jackie with two E's. Okay. Now, so thanks for joining us, Jackie and Jan. And Tessa, from the founder of In Mind In Body, you can check out the In Mind In Body website at www.inmindinbody.com, and you can follow Guy, beg your pardon, you can follow Tessa on Twitter at Guy Tessa. And I would actually recommend people to, you know, converse and engage with the panel here on Twitter. They're very accessible, very friendly, and a wealth of experience there that you can tap into. Social media is great for that, isn't it? So did anyone want to add anything before we wrap this up?
I
was just going to thank you both. Thank you all. So, Jan, carry on.
Yeah, just go on, Jan.
One final thought about some thoughts to banish from here on for your well-being,
yeah.
And that's to banish the use of any thoughts that start with I ought, I should, or I must. And when you think those thoughts, say, who says I should, I ought, I must? It's really worth looking at those kinds of thoughts, because they're not good for our well-being.
Fair enough. Thank you for that, Jan. Go ahead, Tessa.
On top of that, I'm going to say that, you know, part of the mind and body is to, as I say, empower people to believe in themselves, but also to realise on that basis of the should, ought and must, we are our own governors, ultimately. And if we listen to ourselves, listen to our thoughts, listen to our beliefs, we can make very simple, very subtle changes that can make a very, very big difference to our health and well-being. And you don't need anybody else. You have that power within you.
Wonderful. Well, on that lovely note, we'll end the broadcast. Thank you, ladies, for taking part, and I can't wait for our next one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.